Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 345. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how are you enjoying the first week of the AFL season?
It's been fun. A lot of big-time performances. And yeah, I'm just afraid that some of these guys are going to leave before we get there. Yeah. Benefit of going early in the year. I really hope that some of these guys stay. Painter, I'm just hoping we get to see him. I doubt the major league guys like McClain and CES are probably gone, if I had to guess. It's been good so far. It's good to see Painter on the mound. A lot of fun performances.
Yeah, I would love to see McClain and Encarnacion strand, but yeah, probably not. But as long as we get to see Painter, get a Painter start in, that would be phenomenal. I would love to go out for the entire year, but obviously I can't pull the kids out of school just to go watch baseball. It'd be nice, though. But it has still been like 100 degrees there during the day. So it's a little much for this Northeasterner, this Maine kid. I know you're more, even for you, 100 is still a lot. And it gets pretty hot out there. Luckily, it's a dry heat, but still. Yeah. Get down in the 80s would be fine. So hopefully, I've been looking at the weather forecast for the Phoenix Mesa area, and it's starting to get down there. So hopefully, it'll get down to the 80s time we get out there. So we get
some, yeah. I think our week's supposed to be pretty nice.
Yeah, so hopefully that stays the case. And so I went out there times when it's been super hot. And remember that one year where there was some nights we were out there in sweatshirts.
Yep.
It was, I remember one, I forget what year it was. Not last year. It was either like 2021, 2022, probably 2022, where there was, I think, one night game. And it was warmer in Maine than it was in Arizona, which I was very upset about. So I was like, I come out here to escape the cold weather and get some warm weather and some baseball. But yeah, right now it's looking pretty good for that forecast a couple weeks out. And yeah, by the time you're listening to this, it'll be 2 weeks away. We both fly out on the 28th, get a couple extra games in this year than we usually do. So yeah, but still get the AFL, get some playoff baseball, which has been really, really fun. Both New York teams and their respective league championship series, and Cleveland's still in there. It's been a fun postseason and still got some live baseball to watch. So just not in person for the next couple of weeks, but we're going to look back, though, to the end of the season, August, September, look at some players that stood out one way or the other, both good and bad. Some people check out or have some of their focus go over to football. We get it. People like football, too, even though baseball is the king, at least on this podcast. But try to talk about some of those performances you might have missed, or maybe you didn't realize that this player was that good or that bad down the stretch. Can I talk about what went right or wrong for those guys and how we're valuing them moving forward? We got 10 names on the list here. five that finished hot, five that finished cold. All hitters today. We will do the pitcher version of this next week, and then we'll do a FYPD mock the week after that. I'll bring on a guest or two for that. It's a couple of fun episodes upcoming, and then we'll be out in the Arizona Fall League after that. So a lot of good baseball talk here, even in October and getting into November in a few weeks. But before we get into the usual stuff here, we'll get the housekeeping out of the way. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugo.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more from each of us. It's where all of our Dynasty prospect and FYPD rankings are. We're both pumping out a ton of content, various AFL stuff, team and positional prospect Dynasty. So much stuff that we're both pumping out daily over there on our platforms. Check those out. We greatly appreciate the support. And of course, you got to check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Now, RotoBaller is a year-round powerhouse pumping out content after content, great content, high-quality content for all sports. Obviously, baseball has wrapped up, but we still got plenty of dynasty and prospect work going on over there, some reviews of the season, looking ahead to 2025, plus obviously football, basketball, etc. So check that out over at rotoballer.com and use that code TOOLSHED at checkout to get you 10% off any premium package, rotoballer.com. All right, Chris, let's start with the colds here. We'll start with the hots this time, and we'll start with Kerry Carpenter, who Sneaky had a really good second half of the season. And again, we're looking at more so August and September. And if you lower the plate appearance threshold down to, 100 plate appearances, Carpenter was tied for 8th in WRC Plus with Francisco Lindor and just ahead of Jackson Merrill and William Contreras. So in August and September, in 133 plate appearances, Carpenter slashed .286, .348, .605 with 10 home runs in 37 games. Also had 28 RBI as well and a .319 ISO, which over this time frame, if Fangraphs would load here, was the 7th best mark, right ahead of Corbin Carroll and Matt Chapman. Chris, I know you were mentioning that you were a big Carpenter guy. How are you looking at this end of the season for him? Obviously, it was a bit of an up and down year. He missed some time. End of the season really hot. So how are you evaluating that as we head into the offseason and into 2025?
No, I think that Carpenter's really good. And he started that breakout in 2023. He hit 20 home runs and just 459 plate appearances. It was an .811 OPS, .280 average. This year hit .284 with 18 home runs and just 296 plate appearances. And across the board, it just looks really good. And yeah, he whiffs a little bit. There's a little bit of chase. But at the end of the day, with how hard he's hitting the ball and how often he's squaring it up and barreling, is going to play. He's 27 years old. It feels like that he's just starting the ascent up the ladder to being a high-end player. And the first half was pre-injury, at least. He was really good. And April and May, he hit 8 home runs and 163 plate appearances, 10 doubles, 4 triples, .283, .342, .572 slash, .914 OPS. So he's really good to begin the year. Got hurt, and obviously that was a concerning injury. Like, he had a back injury, if I'm not mistaken. And when we think about backs, it's that's not good. Think about Evan Carter, for instance. Affected him all year. And now he had an ablation done, which that's really scary too. Aside the point, Carpenter comes back and it's okay. He's even better. 133 plate appearances, he hit 10 home runs, and he had a .957 OPS. So I think the power's there, no question of that. The angles are legit. The barrel rate was one of the best in baseball this year. Sweet spot percentage, incredibly good. He hits the ball to all fields. And again, I feel like he's just starting the breakout. I wouldn't be shocked next year if he's a 30 home run bat with a 900 plus OPS again. And I'm fully buying Kerry Carpenter. I think that at this point, to me, he's proven himself to be like a top 100 dynasty asset, in my opinion. Whether that sticks or not, I hope so. But man, he's just been so good when he's been on the field, like a per plate appearance base. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I'm going to look on the Razzball Player Rater and look at I think they do the dollar per game to see where he would grade out. Because I'd bet it's pretty high. He played half a season. So It's not going to be high on the player rater, but I'd bet on it being pretty high on a per game basis. So I'm going to look if you have any thoughts to add on Carpenter.
Yeah, I was just looking at what the heck an ablation is, and I don't like the sounds of that. But Carpenter absolutely mashed. You look at quality of contact was phenomenal with him. 18.7% barrel rate this year. He had an elite sweet spot rate over 40%. Hard hit rate, 46.5%. So he absolutely matched the ball, and then obviously he did a lot of that down the stretch. The one kind of setback I have with Carpenter is I like the player overall, and yeah, I'm sure he's super high on a per game basis, and he hits really all pitches. He only hit 237 against breaking balls, but if that's your worst one, that's not terrible. He absolutely matched fastballs and off speed. Hit 310 with a 667 slug against fastballs, 293 with a 672 slug against off speed. So he matched both of those. It's just, can he get to that next level? Because he's basically become a strong side platoon bat. Like they didn't really use him that much this year against lefties. He only had 32 plate appearances all year against lefties and 264 against righties. I want to see what it was in 2023. He had 78 plate appearances against lefties, 381 against righties, / 235, 333, 324 last year. And this year, there's only 32 plate appearances, but 107, 194, 214. So I'm going to keep an eye on that to see if that's an ongoing trend that goes on in the 2025, because I think if I could guarantee him getting 550-plus plate appearances, and then, yeah, I think absolutely he'd be a top 100 guy. I wouldn't roll out him having an Anthony Santander type of year and getting up near 40 home runs. I think Santander had over 40 home runs this year, if I recall correctly. But, yeah, we've seen the power. He had 18 and basically 300 plate appearances this year. Now you double that, there's 36, looking at over 100 RBI. That Detroit lineup, as we've seen, is up and coming. They got a lot of good young talent there, more on the way. So I think that Detroit lineup's just going to keep slowly getting better and better over the next couple of years, and to the point where Carpenter will still be 27, 28, 29 when you get some of these other guys get more experience, you get other guys currently in the minors up. So I think this could be a pretty good lineup for the next half decade or so, and he'll be probably a guy right in the middle of it. But guys, wonder if he just gets limited a little bit due to sitting out more often than you like to see against lefties. But did you find out where he ranked on that player rater?
Yeah, so it's funky given that, like, you have some guys with one plate appearance samples and whatnot. Okay, but to put it into context, Carpenter was $27.9 per game. So others around that range, Ellie De La Cruz was 27.8. Soto was 30. Yelich was 29.3. Brent Rooker was 31.5. Kettle Marte, 32.4. Kyle Tucker, 33.9. So like a dollar per game basis, like, Carpenter was up there with the elites. So does it stick? Yeah, that's a good question. But he was ahead of guys like Lindor, Ellie, Gunner, Vlad Jr. I don't know. It's just interesting to look at that and see. But yeah, it's definitely a talent. Injury is definitely a little worrisome, as you mentioned too.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I think he has the upside to be a top, I don't know if I say top 50, but top 75 guy for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. Can he stay healthy? How much does he play against lefties? A couple questions there, but talent definitely. You look at all the quality of contact metrics for him were very impressive. Average EV, expected BA, expected slug. Everything was pretty damn good this past year. And that Detroit team has become really fun to watch for sure. Next one up here, Victor Robles going up to Seattle. It's so weird to see him in Seattle. I keep thinking Washington with Victor Robles. He had a really good second half of the season as well. Stole a ton of bases. Looking at, again, just August to September, he had 177 plate appearances, 21 steals in that time frame, 31 runs scored as well with a 312, 379, 442 slash line. Those 21 steals ranked third only behind Otani, who had 31, and Xavier Edwards had 22, and he was tied with Joe Ram with 21, and his 31 runs scored in that time frame put him 28th, but still pretty good last couple months of the season for Robles. I can't fully buy into Robles. Contact skills and speed, I'm not doubting those. Contact skills are you know, they're around average, and when he, given his speed, he'll probably always hit for a decent average, and he's done that in the last 2 years. Granted, it was inconsistent playing time for him. He's only got, let's see, 421 combined plate appearances the last 2 years, but hit 299 last year in 126 plate appearances, 307 this year in 295 plate appearances. Quality of contact overall took a slight step forward, but still below average. I just don't see him ever being more than, I don't know if I ever could see even 10 home runs out of him. Higher ground ball rate, lower quality of contact rates. So I just don't see him, even over a full year, getting more than 7, 8, 9, something like that. But I just wonder, is he an everyday guy going forward? I think he's at least earned that to start next year. But at the same time, can he hold on to that for a full season? That we have not seen him do yet. Every opportunity up until recently, he's floundered on. So I don't know. I think there's some value there, given the speed, decent average, and if he's maybe hitting high in the order, maybe he can give you a decent amount of runs as well. But lack of power, lack of track record and consistency with him, maybe I'll miss out, but I'll be fine with that. I'm not buying Robles right now. But what are your thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, he was a different bat than we've ever seen. In the second half, like post All-Star break, he was incredible. It was 328 average, 393 OBP, 456 slug, 151 WRC plus, which is crazy. No denying the speed, 28 stolen bases in 29 attempts, 3 home runs. Like, it's all great to see. And the contact you mentioned, it was, yeah, he's slowly gotten some contact back. So there were some questions about that. Like, he was a talented prospect, but he had struggled with contact for a little bit, but 87% zone certainly speaks over that span. Definitely chased a little bit, 33% chase. So that's a little higher than you'd like to see. But again, you look at the Statcast data over that span, it was a 3.6% barrel rate, 28% hard hit rate, 86 mile an hour average EVs. You have to wonder, like you said, is he a full-time player long-term? Is he able to hold down a spot there? And obviously, like, with what he did, he certainly earned that respect, and he was hitting the top of the lineup to end the year. It seems like that they really liked having Victor Robles on that team. I wonder who could take that spot. They really don't have a lot of outfield prospects that are like knocking on the door. I don't think that you're going to see like a Dominic Canzone come and take a spot, or a Cade Marlowe. Do they go out and sign somebody? Do they trade for an outfielder? Like, those are all possibilities too. But a lot of their, and this is a loaded farm system, but a lot of that talent is actually in the infields, or at the lower levels at least. So yeah, think about that. I don't know. Maybe he does have a spot next year and we're totally wrong, but it's like the Joe Adele thing where it's okay, like, how many hot streaks does he have to show us before he goes back to being himself? And right. Maybe Adele, I'll acknowledge he was significantly better this year, will Robles just go back to being that guy? And that's my fear in the back of my head.
Yeah, same here. I said he hasn't shown us. This is probably like the best stretch of his career that he's had. And yeah, you mentioned Canzone, Marlowe. I think there's still some intrigue there, but they haven't really had the best team last 12 months or so either. Locklear, Bliss, all these other guys are infielders, and then you got the guys in the lower minors, as you mentioned. I almost wonder, because obviously they have two outfield spots with Arozarena and Julio Rodriguez. So it's that third outfield spot, right field, where Robles was playing. Do they, obviously there's been a lot of trade rumors that they might deal one of their arms for a bat. Red Sox would be a logical fit. I've heard Willie Abreu's name bantered about, or San Rafaela. We shall, even Jaron Duran, which I don't think that he gets traded, but yeah, we'll see what Seattle does. Hard to speculate at this point in time. But as it stands now, if they don't bring in someone like a Willie Abreu or better, or any free agent this offseason, it's probably going to be Victor Robles, and he'll probably hit leadoff again in front of Rodriguez, Raleigh, and Arozarena, even Luke Rayleigh, who we almost put on this list, so that sneaky good end of the year as well. Yeah, there's some value here. I'm a little hesitant to buy in. Next guy here, going back to the Detroit Tigers with Parker Meadows. I probably should have done him after Carpenter. I don't know why I didn't put it that way on the outline. But regardless, Meadows also had a solid end of the season after absolutely terrible start to the season. And he was one of my, I think my two most, or two of my three or four most drafted players on NFBC in redraft this past year were Parker Meadows and Nuovi Merkley, which we know didn't work out whatsoever. At least Meadows got hot late in the year, but at that point, I think I had dropped him in every league after he went back down to the minors. As you look at, he was demoted on, was it May 6th? At that time, he was slashing 0.96, 2.24, 2.19. Came back up for a cup of coffee in early July. But then once he came back for good in August, he was really good. Looking at a 2.96, 3.40, 500 slash line in 201 plate appearances, six home runs, five steals. Wasn't walking as much, only a 6.5% walk rate, but also kept the K rate in check at 20.9%. Profiles, some good, some bad there. Obviously, good sprint speed, he's a good athlete, plays a good center field as well. And power was kind of hit or miss, but overall, around league average and barrel rate, a little below in hard hits. I don't know. So still some good, some bad in the profile, Chris. How are you valuing that end of the season for Meadows? He's still only 24. Are you looking to buy in moving forward?
Yeah, I feel like that was the player we thought he could be.
Yep.
Now, will he be an 840 OPS and a 140 WRC plus, like over full seasons? Maybe not, but yeah, I think that you look and you say, okay, he had 200 plate appearances over the final 2 months. He had six home runs. He had five stolen bases. That's exactly what I think of when I think of Parker Meadows being like a potential 2020 type. There's definitely that in there. We saw it. He had 10 doubles. He had five triples. I think there's a lot of value to be had with Meadows, and I think that he has that ability to continue that success. Now, the concerning aspect, like with Robles, when we look under the hood a little bit, it's okay. It's just a 5.5% barrel rate, a 29.5% hard hit rate, 87-mile-an-hour average exit velocity. That's not all that different than what Victor Robles put up, which is a little bit concerning. The contact is good. No denying that. Saw a 78% contact rate over those final 2 months, almost 89% in zone, and just a 24% chase. So I think that the plate approach is better, so you can rely on higher OBP. And I do think, just looking, I believe ultimately that Meadows, he just has the frame. He's got the, I'm not saying he has big pop, but he's a 6'5", 200-pound athlete. I think that he's going to outslug the EVs he has his whole career. So I don't see why that would not continue. Now, the other concern would be that home ballpark in Detroit. How does it play for him? And maybe it affects him. Maybe it doesn't. He was actually a little bit better at home, which is an encouraging sign. Take that for what it's worth. But I do think that there's still plenty to like with Meadows. Yeah, sure. Maybe he's not a superstar. He's not going to evolve into that. But he's definitely a useful player. It's going to put up good OBPs. He's going to put up some power and some speed. So, yeah, I'm definitely interested in buying back in. I think the cost will probably be depleted enough where you can get him at a pretty cheap price point, if I'm guessing, yeah, at least.
Absolutely. I don't think people, maybe it's gone back up a little bit with how we ended the season, but I think you look at the overall line, which is still pretty unimpressive once you factor in the bad first 5 weeks of the season. And yeah, I think he still is a good buy with pretty, I don't want to say it's terribly low, but it's definitely lower than it was entering the season. But I still have some more long-term thoughts now as I did entering the season, even with the ups and downs. Like, I thought, all right, this would be a guy that could lead off, score a decent amount of runs, and flirt with 2020 every year. And I still think that's the case with Meadows. And that's what we saw end of the season. Like you said, that was the guy we expected entering the season. And maybe, again, a young player, we expect the ups and downs. Granted, that was pretty bad first 5 weeks of the season, but then he showed the upside he has, and he was leading off against righties. He was hitting more so like in the seventh spot against lefties, but if he's leading off for them around two-thirds of the time or so, hitting in front of Carpenter and Riley Green, Colt Keith, and some of the other young guys in that lineup, maybe he can get 80-90 runs and flirt with 2020 and be in that top 100-ish range moving forward. I think he can get similar range to like a Colton Cowser. They're different players, but just like that top 100-ish, give or take, range, I think he could absolutely get there moving forward. So, yeah, I am definitely looking to buy Meadows as well. The next guy here, Willy Adames, who might have had like the quietest 30-20 season I can remember in recent memory, because there were so many other storylines. Obviously, Judge and Witt and Lindor and Ohtani, obviously. But last 2 months of the season, Willy Adames had 15 home runs, which was the fourth most in baseball behind Schwarber, Judge, and Ohtani. Had 41 RBI, 36 runs scored, 9 steals, hit 258, 332, 525. And then overall, 32 home runs and 21 steals, scored 93 runs over and drove in 112 and 251, 331, 462 slash line. This is a very consistent power bat. He had 31 in 2022, 24 last year, 32 this year, and 25 and 20 before that. So he said 5 straight years above 20 home runs. And even if you include 2019, he had 6 full years in a row above 20. But the steals, he had 30 coming into this year in 6 seasons, and he had 21. Previous career high was 8 back in 2022. Obviously, everyone was stealing more this year, but getting up to 20 steals, phenomenal for his value. I've always been an Adames guy. I like Adames. Am I expecting 21 steals again? No, probably not. They'll probably drop back down, at least down to the teens or something like that. But power's legit. He's shown that he can hit around 250s, 248 career guy. And yeah, that's fluctuated a bit over the years. Quality of contact metrics are definitely there. This year, he ranked, in the top quarter of the league in a lot of those metrics, 12% barrel, 41% hard hit rate. Sweet spot rate was 38.2%, which ranked pretty high as well. He's 77 percentile bat speed. Walk rate was over 10% for the second straight year. So a lot of good there. Yeah, K rate's always been a little higher, but he's been in like that 25 to 27% range the last few years. That's manageable. So I don't think he'll rise in value, maybe even take a slight step back next year. I still think this is a top 100 guy. You can probably still get for a non-top 100 price tag. So I'd say if you have him, I'd hold. I wouldn't sell high on Adames, and maybe I'd still be looking to target him depending on the price tag. But how about you, Chris?
Yeah, no, I think he's going to land with a contending team. Not that obviously the Brewers they made the playoffs, so this is a good team, but I think that somebody's going to make a big splash for Adames. The Dodgers need a shortstop. The Braves need a shortstop. I could see Adames landing in a lineup where maybe it affects the steals, but also could mean the counting stats be way up. And we are talking about somebody that drove in 112 and scored 93 runs. So right. How much more can it tick up? But I just look at Adames year over year, and he's been as good as they come the last 4 seasons. Since 2021, he's been really good. Yeah, he's had a couple down years with batting average, but it's almost a little bit fluky where the contact rates have been consistent and actually have gotten better each year. And he's ran some low BABIPs in 2022 and 2023. So yeah, I think you think about it and it's okay. Like, he's definitely normalized as like a 250 hitter. He hit 262 in 2021 and 251 this year with pretty normal BABIPs. So I think that this is the hitter we're looking at. It's like a 250 type. He's hit 112 home runs in the last 4 seasons. That's obviously a big encouragement there, nearly 30 a year. And if we're looking at a per plate appearance basis, if you get like 650 plate appearances a year, he's definitely 30 home run bat. I think that Adames is a good buy. He's just turned 29 years old. So I think that the bat's going to play for several more years. I don't really see this kind of profile just falling off. He's just done it year over year. So why would he not continue to do it, I guess, is my question. So I'm certainly buying into the performance. And I think top 100 is definitely fair. I would be certainly looking to get him in that range. If you miss out on shortstop early, I think he's a good value target.
Yeah, no, I he absolutely is. See, where did I have him in my last dynasty ranks? If I guess, I'd have to have him in the 70 range here. 84, okay, that's what I thought. 75 to 100 range. And I think that's fair. I think next year, 30, and maybe he does have down to 12 to 15. But like you said, he could land in a lineup where that gets canceled out by more runs than RBI. I think Atlanta would be a great spot. I've even heard like Boston has some interest. We have enough middle infielders. I don't know why. but maybe we trade some of those for a pitcher or something like that. Boston looks like they'll be active this year, so I wouldn't rule out him in Boston. Obviously, the Dodgers are in on every good free agent, so you could see him landing there. Like you say, he's probably going to land in a good spot. I don't think he's going to land in some poor situation like Pittsburgh all of a sudden shells out a bunch of money, or Miami or someone like that. I think he's going to land in a good spot. And, yeah, I think he's at least going to hold value in that top 75 to 100 range. I can't see him going, like, way back down. So, yeah, definitely buying into Willie Adames. Last hot hitter to end the year here, one of the hottest, Eugenio Suarez, who was really bad first half of the year and then really good in the second half. Look at before the All-Star game, slashing 216, 302, 366, 10 home runs in 367 plate appearances. After the All-Star game, 307, 341, 602 with 20 home runs in 273 plate appearances. And in August and September specifically, 302, 338, 566, 14 home runs, 42 RBI, 40 runs scored, and he was top 10 in all three of those categories and had a 263 ISO as well. Obviously, Chris, he's always been a pretty good source of power. That remained the case this year. And he got to 30 home runs again for the second time in 3 years, third time in 4 years, and the, was that, fifth time in 7 years, and one of those 2 years he didn't get it was the shortened year, which he had 15 home runs there, so he probably would have gotten it there as well. One of the more consistent power sources, but a tale of two seasons for Suarez. Are you reading much into that second half of the year, the final few months where he was really hot, that maybe he can carry that over in the 2025? I almost said 2024. It's weird saying 2025 still, but or do you think this is, given some of the contact and strikeout issues he's had, that this is just who he is, just a streaky hitter with pretty prominent peaks and valleys?
Yeah, I think that he probably gives you a lot of peaks and valleys. Not to say that he won't hit 30 again, because it didn't look like he was going to hit 30 for a while, and he got on a super hot streak. He has a club option. I'm curious for how much. Wouldn't be shocked if Arizona picks that up, if it's pretty affordable. I'm going to pull that up, but at 33 years old, it's okay. How long will the performance continue before it potentially dives off a bit? At the end of the day, we know this is a big power bat. We know that he's more than capable of hitting for juice. Is he going to hit 256 again? Probably not. Probably revert something closer to like 230 that he showed you the previous 2 years. But I do think they pick up the $15 million club option. Probably makes a lot of sense for a contending Arizona team to pick up. And will he perform again? Probably. Am I buying like a super big performance like he had in the second half? Probably not. But I do think he's a serviceable power bat if you can afford the potential downside of the batting average, at least.
Yeah, that's where I am with him, too. He could be a decent corner infield option for a contending team, but I'm not, like, rushing out to get Eugenio Suarez or anything like that. All right, let's move over to the guys that finished the season not so hot here. A lot of big names here, and most of these names, actually all of them, are really on the younger side. We'll start with Royce Lewis, who, Lewis was looking like MVP-caliber guy, potential fantasy first-rounder at some points last year. But he had some pretty prominent valleys to go with those peaks as well. You look at overall, he had 16 home runs and 325 plate appearances. Went down to 233 with a 295 OBP. And then you're looking at over the final 2 months of the season, in 204 plate appearances, slashed only 207, 265, 337. Only 5 home runs. We're used to him hitting home run almost every day at one point, but that was not the case later in the year. Metrics are still, pretty good. There's no massively concerning metrics here. Contact is slightly below average. Chase rate's a little high, but 33.3%, not terribly. And he's still above average, obviously, in quality of contact, though the average EV was below average. But what are you making of Lewis now, Chris? I mean, we've seen flashes, obviously, of, flashes that made him look like potential first or second round fantasy guy. But those have all only been small flashes because of performance and durability have been pretty inconsistent, especially that durability, unfortunately. At this point, are you still thinking he's going to turn into an elite guy, or where are you at on him now?
He's really hard to gauge because you also have to factor in how often he gets injured. And was he playing hurt in the second half when he came back and was really bad? I mean, I don't know. Is it possible? Yeah, I wouldn't rule that out at all, because when he came back from injury, you mentioned some of the numbers, they were not pretty at all. And over the final 2 months, he didn't seem like himself at all. He wasn't hitting for power like we had seen. Here's the underline over that span. Yeah, everything ticked back. It was a 86 mile an hour average EV, still a 9.5% barrel rate's good. He had 35% hard hit rate, but really that's not the Royce that we know. Like, he puts up some pretty big numbers when he's fully healthy. So at least that's something to consider. In 2023, while it was a smaller sample, it was a 90 mile an hour average EV, near 12% barrel rate, 42% hard hit. I don't know, man. I'm struggling with Royce. I'm just not sure he ever gives you enough. And the year when his value is probably the lowest, he has a full season most likely. But again, we're talking about somebody that's really never played more than half a season. This year, 325 plate appearances. That's a career high. In 3 years, last 3 years, he has 605 plate appearances. So that's like a full season. So I think that in itself is a little bit concerning. When you factor that in, just he's just not healthy. And ever since, you know, COVID, really, he hasn't been healthy. So we know he missed all of 2021, didn't play in 2020. So I don't know. It's just been an interesting career path for him. He's a young 25 years old. We'll see. I'm not buying in, just given the fact that I think the injuries are just the major concern.
Yeah, he's a young 25 chronologically, but his knees are like 45, I feel like. So I get, I don't know why, this is kind of maybe a weird comparison, but some Mike Trout vibes in the sense of Trout obviously has had his issues on the field lately. When he's on the field, he can crank some home runs, and Royce has shown that, but then he's only playing 200 to 300 plate appearances a year. So at this point, what can we expect from Royce? Can we ever expect the full season? Obviously, he's already had two ACL surgeries by the age of 24, really. So the speed that he once showed in the minor leagues is gone. Sprint speed was below average this year. He had zero steals. He had six last year, but I don't know if we can expect more than a few steals a year from him. So if he's not going to be a guy that's impactful in that area, he's going to have to be an elite player, at least hit for a high average and for a good amount of power and stay on the field. And can he do that? I think that's a massive question. So while he's talented and he's a fun player, I think at this point there are more questions than answers with Royce Lewis. So it's hard to rank him as an elite player in Dynasty, and he's slowly trending down in my rankings. Can you even value him as a top 50 guy right now? Obviously, the upside is there. We've seen it. But so inconsistently that I don't think I can even put him as a top 50 guy. Could he get back there next year? Absolutely. But I don't know. It would really depend on the price. If the price tag is more closer to 100 than top 50, okay, I might be looking to buy in, just given the potential for a good ROI there. But if it's still close to top 50 or inside the top 50, I wouldn't be looking to buy there. That's for sure. So I guess it really just depends on that price tag. Next name here, going to Baltimore with Adley Rutschman, who he wasn't like bad overall this year, but just very mediocre and was bad to end the season. He only had two home runs over the last 2 months of the season with a 221, 286, 314 slash line. And overall, he had 19 home runs this year in 638 plate appearances, but took a pretty solid step back for the most part. And slash line, it went from 277, 374, 435, down to 250, 318, 391. OPS dropped exactly 100 points. Quality of contact still went down a little bit, but stuck in line with previous years. Right around league average for the most part. And though still has a good approach, K rate better than league average, though the walk rate still above average compared to the league average, but dropped 4.5% this past year. So just still good metrics there. Contact is above average, 88% zone, 83% overall. So I think obviously he's still going to be a good catcher moving forward, but this is the guy we had, many of us had as the dynasty C1. And that's not the case anymore. I think there's a case to rank a few of the guys ahead of him, at least for next year. Like, I'd rather have, you know, like Cal Raleigh, for instance, for next year only. So is he just an above average catcher, Chris, and not a stud top five option at the position? I think that's the question we have to ask ourselves right now.
Yeah, it's so interesting. What exactly happened this year with Adley? Because I'm not saying that, again, not bad, but you thought he would take a step forward. Age, you know, 26 now, you expect the steps to progress, but instead we saw the barrel rate actually drop about 1.5 percentage points. The average exit velocity stayed pretty stagnant. It dipped, you know, 0.2 miles an hour from last year. The launch angle ultimately was much higher, which resulted in less like balls in the sweet spot. And then the XWOBA and XWOBA-CON were way down. A notable drop when you go from 391 XWOBA-CON to 343. That's pretty substantial. Hard hit rate was still in line. So across the board, I think just the launch angles, just the inconsistency of the batted balls, the standard deviation of the launch angles not being as good. And you look at it and say, we hit way less ground balls. That should be good. Sure, but there's also unhealthy fly balls too. And the fly ball rate did jump 6 percentage points. Basically, all the ground balls that he lost went to fly balls. Line drive rate stayed pretty stagnant, but it didn't really turn into results either. It's a perplexing profile to look at because in a lot of ways, I feel like he did some things better. And really the only thing that I can come up with is he got under a few more balls. Like his under percentage did jump pretty substantially from 23.8% last year to 33.3% this year, where MLB average is like 25-ish percent. So that's obviously pretty notable. I don't know. I look at Adley. We know he can make good contact. He did chase a lot more this year than previous years, which kind of tells me he was pressing at some points in the season because he's never been a high chase rate guy at any point in his career. I don't know. Do I think he bounces back? Probably. I really do believe that. But is he going to get over that barrier and be like a 25 home run bat? If he's 25 home run bat, I don't care if he has 250 at the catcher position. Like, that'll absolutely play. But to see your OPS drop 100 points from 809 to 709, you don't like to see that. You don't like to see the slug below 400, excuse me, at 391. And the OBP dropped substantially from 2023 to 2024, from 374 to 318. All that to say, I do think Adley is still going to be good. I still think there's a lot of potential in here. Curious now, the wheels start turning with the splits. Was he just exceptionally bad as a left-handed hitter?
Yep.
That's what I'm wondering. He was actually really good versus left-hand. He had a 902 OPS against left-handed pitching, 631 OPS against right-handed pitching. So that's obviously interesting to look at and see. Okay, with switch hitters, sometimes it's something to at least consider. I don't know. Is this a problem? And I'm looking now. Is this something that's always been a problem? I don't know. Looking back to last year against left-handed pitching, he slashed versus right-handed as a lefty at a 777 OPS. So that's fine. And an 895 versus left-handers as a right-handed batter. So all that to say, I don't know. Just something to think about. Just digging through the data, like what went wrong. I don't know. I don't think a ton went wrong. I think there's just maybe a couple little tweaks in the swing that put him back on path. What's the upside here?
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention was the splits because, yeah, they got more prominent this year. And I always had this thought about switch hitting. Should he abandon hitting lefty and just go as a righty? Or I've always thought that switch hitters – weren't tackling it the right way. This is just my own personal mindset on it. Let's say for when he's a lefty, what if the the lefty has, it's Chris Sale lefty, right? Good breaking ball. All right, maybe hitting righty. Or maybe, I'm getting this backwards, hold on. You know, if it's a lefty with a good changeup, maybe you stay as a lefty because you don't want that thing darting down and away from you. Or if it's Chris Sale lefty, you go the other way and then hit righties. Maybe it's more so an arsenal thing than just, oh, it's a lefty in the mound, I got to hit righty. Or righty in the mound, I got to hit lefty. Maybe you look at, do they have good more so a good changeup and sinker? Maybe they have a better cutter, slider, etc. So I've always wondered if that should be a better way to approach it. But yeah, he definitely was a lot better as a righty this year. But unfortunately, obviously, you face less lefties than you do righties. They'll, from the other side of the plate, was pretty mediocre. And yeah, I don't think he's going to be good, but is he going to be elite? And that's the question I have. And maybe he's more in that second tier, like a C overall, C4 through 7, as opposed to someone that's up there. Like Contreras is the C1 for me right now. And I think after that, it gets pretty interesting because Will Smith had a down season compared to expectations as well. So, yeah, I think Adley's good. Just maybe he's not going to be that elite stud that we expected. Yeah, and I think that's a fair question to ask. Another catcher here, Logan Ohapi, who had, you know, still had 20 home runs this year, but, you know, overall it was pretty rough, you know, in the last 2 months of the season. In 169 plate appearances from August 1st on, 168, 237, 290 with a 39.1% strikeout rate, which was just, I think, maybe the highest rate in that period. But really, if you look at it, it was more so just August. He actually got a little better in September. September was 266, 338, 453. Still was striking out at a pretty decent clip, but not nearly as bad as August. August was just absolutely terrible. Look at, he was hot in June, 324. He was hot in July, 299. Then August, for some reason, 099, 163, 176, 44 strikeouts in 98 plate appearances. So really, it was a really bad August and end of the season, much better in September, which gives me some optimism here. But Hoppy, Chris, he's still a different guy than we saw in the minor leagues. We saw in the minor leagues a guy that had a phenomenal approach to the plate. I think he had more walks than strikeouts his last like full year in the minors, or it was at least close to it. But that K rate's kind of been on an upward trend over the last couple of years as he got into the major leagues, and the walk rate trending the opposite way. So this past year, 6.3% walk rate, 29.7% K rate. He's hitting the ball hard, though. He's got good quality of contact metrics. So I'm wondering, is this kind of the Ohapi that we should expect moving forward? Yeah, there was a lot of ups and downs this year. Overall, he's been a 240-ish guy, 240, 250 guy in the major leagues with 20-plus home runs. I'm wondering if that's the Ohapi that we're going to see moving forward.
Yeah, you have to wonder. And obviously, we hope that he gets back on track because he looked really good to start the year. And it was an unfortunate end of the year with, and he ended the year actually on a really high note. He had a four-hit game to end the season, and he had a four-hit game, you know, just a couple of games prior to that. Yeah, maybe he was getting it back together. But again, you look at the splits by month, and it's just interesting to watch. Was he just exhausted at the end of the year? I don't know. He's still young, so that's obviously encouraging. He's just 24 years old. And yeah, I think we know the talent's there. We've seen him put together some really good stretches, but also the stretch in August was really bad. Like, he was not startable in August when you hit sub 100. Like, that's bad. And he had a 176 slug, a 339 OPS that month, 45% strikeout rate. That was very uncharacteristic of him. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, what was going on that month? We can speculate all we want, but we don't know. But at the end of the day, can he get back to being that guy? He had a 12% barrel rate this year. He had a 46% hard hit rate, 90.5 mile an hour average exit velocity. Like, I look at those things, I'm like, all right, there's definitely a lot to like here. Even in that bad stretch, like, you look at it, like, after the All-Star break, still really good. 16% barrel rate, 46% hard hit, 91 mile an hour average. That's weird for me to look at, because even when he was so bad in August, like, he had his one of his top barrel rates. At the end of the day, like, the contact was down, but when you're hitting the ball that hard, it seems like you would make some things happen. I don't know. It's just interesting to look at the contact trends over the course of the year. I think that maybe it's a buy low opportunity, but what should the expectation be? And I think he's shown, like you mentioned, the last couple of years, like maybe he just is a 240 type hitter, and that's okay. Like, you can handle that at the catcher position. If it gives you 20 home runs, I'll take that. But I think we'll always want a little bit more.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I think 250-25 is where I have him settling in as long term, which I think is still, given his age, that's still a top 10 dynasty catcher. And someone, I think I'd probably still take him. I want to see what you think about this. I would take him over Francisco Alvarez moving forward. I have more questions about Alvarez than I do Ohapi. Who would you rather have moving forward, Ohapi or Alvarez?
Man, Alvarez upside, power upside, so tremendous, but yeah, he took some steps back too. The catcher landscape was really interesting this year to look at and say, okay, like, who are, like, who's going to emerge and who wants a top spot? And we really didn't see that from many people.
Yeah, it was, that position this year was all over the place. It was insane. One last note on Ohapi. He actually had the second best sweet spot percentage this year at 42.9%. That was only behind Freddie Freeman at 43.1%. Very interesting leaderboard here on the sweet spot. It's Freeman, Ohapi, Lennon Sosa, Taylor Ward, Gavin Sheets.
Interesting.
Luis Arraez. Never thought he'd be up at the top of the leaderboard. That wasn't contact related. And then Aaron Judge, Andy Páez, Brandon Marsh, and Eugenio Suarez were the top 10. Very interesting top 10 there. But yeah, Ohapi was number two there, which definitely helps him in that power department. Next guy here, Luis Robert. Is there a more polarizing player at this point than Luis Robert? There probably is, but he's at least top five most polarizing, at least for fantasy purposes, at least, because we've seen the upside. It's a first round talent. There's been times where he's carried fantasy teams. And that year he had last year, 38 home runs, 20 steals. We saw that upside, but that has been seen so infrequently at this point. He's only cracked 100 games twice. One of those being this year when he was 100 on the nose. So he's only had 1 year with over 500 plate appearances. That was last year. 1 year over 15 home runs last year. Now, you mean I can go on and on? You catch my drift. Last year was the only year that he really capitalized or came close to it on the upside, and where we rank him for dynasty, where we draft him and redraft the ADP, etc. So I love Robert. I've had him a lot over the years, which probably actually it's not worked out well for me, but I got to wonder, can he still be ranked as an elite guy? He's still 27. I still think he's a top 100 dynasty guy. I'm not getting crazy and dropping him outside my top 100, but I don't have him top 50 right now. I don't think you can. Similar to Royce, you've seen it. And obviously we've seen it a bit more with Robert than we have with Royce. He's been around a bit longer. But with all the questions we have about durability, the OBP has always been pretty low. Average has fluctuated a ton over the years. So, yeah, he has top 25 upside, but his downside is very low. So at this point, I can't rank him top 50. And similar to the Royce, the price tag obviously plays a big part in determining whether I want to buy low right now. But right now, I don't know if I do, just because I don't know if I trust him to ever stay healthy. It feels like he's always dealing with something. Even if he's on the field, he's always got like a nagging whatever injury, shoulder, knee, hip, whatever it may be. So even when he's on the field, I think he's like never fully 100%. So I'm not out on Robert, but I'm just not looking to really buy in. Like, show me that you can stay healthy first, and then we'll talk, Luis.
Yeah. Do I think that he was checked out this year given the circumstances surrounding that team? Probably. But again, you mentioned health being a factor. 100% true. We're talking about somebody that's so hyper-aggressive, one of the worst chase rates in baseball pretty much year over year. Actually got better this year, which is funny. He went dip below the 40% mark for his career number for the first time in his career, I guess since 2020, that is. The contact skills are, you know, lagging. 77% end zone's not great. And you drop all the way down to 64% overall. That's pretty bad too. Robert, we know, is capable of hitting the ball hard. Like, he's done it throughout his career. He's got speed. But at the end of the day, I think for me, at least, the biggest thing and the biggest factor is injuries. And he hasn't shown he can stay healthy. Is he traded this offseason? If so, they're, you know, selling low. Maybe not as sell low like from like we would think about fantasy, but it was a pretty bad year all around. I think they hoped that he would finish the year really strong to potentially create a good selling opportunity. And that didn't happen. So yeah, I have no idea, but I'm not really wanting to invest in Luis Robert, even though the upside is pretty tremendous.
Yeah, he's just so hard to invest in right now. Again, if the price tag has dropped low enough where maybe the Robert manager in your league is just looking to unload and you can get him for an outside top 100 price tag, all right, maybe I'd be interested there. But that's really the only case right now that I'd be looking to buy Luis Robert. Hopefully he can stay healthy, but yeah, it's not looking good for him right now. Last player on the list for this episode, we're going to the Bronx here. Player that's still playing right now. Is he the only one we talked about that's still playing? Yes, I believe so. Yep, so only guy left playing in the postseason right now. That's Anthony Volpe of the New York Yankees. After going 20-20 as a rookie, went 12-28 this past year and scored 90 runs. So he still, you know, provided some value. It wasn't like he was like unstartable or anything like that. For good stretches of the year, he was. Like, he had really bad 6 weeks here, and overall the slash line was pretty mediocre once again. In 2023 it was 209, 283, 383 for a 666 slug. That's not great. OPS, nope. Not a great number there, but a 243, 293, 364 slash line for a 657 OPS this year. So again, two straight years OPS under 670. It's 661 for his career in two seasons, 1,290 plate appearances. I mean, Chris, I don't know. Should we? I've stopped expecting more from Volpe. He's still going to get run out there moving forward. Still provides value in the stolen base department. But quality of contacts, pretty mediocre. Contact skills overall are okay. But I think once you factor in the poor quality of contact, he's going to run a lower average. I don't know. People still think of him as a top 100 guy, and I'm just not there with him anymore. I think he's more like in the 150 range for me, because he's shown that he can't get on base at a high clip. The average is pretty bad as well. That he hurts you in more areas than he helps you in. I can't go top 100 with him right now, and I'm not looking to buy. I think I'd have to have a price tag that's more in the 200 range right now for me to even consider buying heading into next year.
Yeah, I got a little duped early in the year. You know, he was putting up some good batting averages. The contact skills substantially improved. And I was, all right, that's all he needed. We were talking about a player who he started the 2023 season as a 21-year-old starting shortstop in the Bronx, and he had good power and speed. Literally, like, all he needed to do was make more contact, and that's honestly exactly what he did this year. But the quality of contact was so bad. I wish we had the bat speed. Like, I'm wondering if he, like, sold out for contact and did not hit for power. Now, Volpe's never hit the ball overly hard, but we did see the barrel rate drop from 9% to 4%. The average EV dropped 1 mile an hour. Launch angle dropped pretty substantially. Ex-Wobicon 385 to 332. So the quality of contact was just not there, despite a reasonable gain in, or I say drop, but improvement in strikeout rate. The contact rate jumped pretty substantially. Overall contact rate went up 6 percentage points. The end zone contact rate went up 2 percentage points. But here's the biggest issue. Something changed in the swing, because the ground ball rate jumped 9 percentage points. Less balls in the air, less line drives, all into the ground. Like, all of his hardest hit balls were just right into the ground. So that's obviously a little bit concerning. Volpe's 23. He's a young 23. Who can he become? I don't know. Is he able to blend some of the power with the contact? We hope so. But again, like, we are talking about somebody that hasn't slugged highly at all either year. Even when he hit 21 home runs in 2023, you mentioned it was just a 383 slug. That's not good. At the end of the day, I have to wonder, how does the bat play? Volpe is a good shortstop. He's going to play because he provides a lot of value in the field. He provides good value with his legs on the bases. But right now, the bat's just not there. I wonder, could they put him on a bat speed program? This year it was 15th percentile bat speed. But I think the issues do go beyond that, because we're talking about someone who's hitting the ball on the ground too much. So Volpe's a kind of a perplexing player for me. Is he worth buying back in on? Sure, maybe, but at the right cost. And I'm not really sure exactly what that cost would be for me, but I'd love to see him put it all together, because there's a pretty intriguing player.
Yeah, I think there's still a chance he could figure some of these things out. Obviously, like you mentioned, he's 23. I don't think either one of us are saying that he's never going to correct the issues he has. So that'd be foolish to say so, but there's several issues to correct here. And yeah, I just don't think this is the perceived value. Maybe if he was on, I hate to pick on these two teams, but like Pittsburgh, Miami, I think it'd be a much easier buy right now, because I think the perceived value would still be a lot lower. But since he's the shortstop of the New York Yankees and all the allure of that position because of Derek Jeter, and then he went 20-20 as a rookie last year, there's still, his name still carries a higher perceived value than it probably should. So yeah, I'm not this year, maybe next offseason we'll see, or during next year, but this offseason in particular probably will not be going after Anthony Volpe. But that is going to wrap us up. Again, we will do the pitcher version of this next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.